two animal companions. This is Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today I'll be reading some stories again on the animals in our lives. And I will begin with Tales of Al, The Water Rescue Dog, The Making of a Superhero by Lynn Cox. And if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles from the National Geographic book, The Genus of Dogs, Understanding Our Best Friends. Our first reading today is from The Tales of Al by Lynn Cox. And previously we had learned that Lynn had been watching a Newfoundland, a very large dog, jump from a helicopter with his handlers in order to rescue a drowning person. Intrigued by what she saw, Lynn called the training academy for these Newfoundland dogs and found that it was in Italy. So she decided to make a journey there. And we start with Chapter 3, By Design. Donatella met me at the Milan airport and offered to take one of my carry-on bags. She was petite and strong middle-aged woman, wearing a khaki top and pants. Her hair was short and dark brown. Her eyes were filled with excitement. Smiling at me, she said she was happy I made it to Italy. Quickly, we walked from the airport terminal to the parking lot. Al, her female Newfoundland dog, was waiting for us in the car. Donatella did not like to leave Al for very long. When Al heard Donatella's voice, the Mazda MPV, where she was waiting for us, started swaying. To move the vehicle that much, she had to be big. Donatella said Al was exceptionally strong and could pull 3 to 4 times her own weight. Al started barking. Speaking in a steady voice, Donatella tried to calm her as she lifted the rear door and opened the largest dog crate I'd ever seen. Al sprang from the vehicle. She was huge, larger than a year-old bear cub. Landing on the ground, she danced around Donatella and jumped up, trying to swipe her huge pink tongue across Donatella's face. Donatella ducked, turned away, and spoke tersely to her. But she was too happy, overjoyed to see Donatella. She was her world, her fun, her life. She gave her food for energy, food for thought, food for treats. Al loved to be with Donatella. Al just loved everything about her and was trying to demonstrate that in every possible way. Wagging her tail rapidly from hip to hip, she nearly knocked Donatella over. Donatella insisted that Al sit. Finally, she obeyed, and Donatella managed to clip a leash to her harness. I had never seen a Newfoundland as exuberant as Al, and I have never seen one that looked like Al. The Newfoundlands I knew had long, thick black coats or long black and white coats. Al was different. By comparison, she was exotic. She had a long brown fur coat that fell softly around her like a giant cape. Other Newfoundlands had large, beautiful brown eyes, but Al's eyes were gold and bright and filled with intelligence exquisite and intriguing. Al saw that I was studying her. She tilted her head down, raised her inner eyebrows, and looked up at me, giving me puppy eyes. Slowly, she sashayed her hips and furry tail and invited me to touch her. "Is it okay if I pet Al?" I asked. "Please do. She loves people," Donatella said, holding the leash tightly but allowing Al to stand. I approached Al slowly so she would remain calm and scratched her behind her soft ears. She groaned softly and rested her bear-sized head against my hip. I felt her double coat. The outer layer was long and wavy and composed of long, coarse guard hairs that served as a barrier that repelled water, caught dirt and debris, and kept Al's undercoat and skin dry. Her undercoat was downy and as soft as a kitten's fur. It was shorter, denser, and fluffier than the outer coat, keeping Al warm in cold, wet weather, and cool in hot, humid weather. Like all Newfoundlands, Al lost fur daily. When people petted her, wispy strands sailed through the air, stuck to the fingers, flew into faces, attached to clothes, and spiraled onto furniture and the floor. It was dog confetti, a celebration of the dog. Spring and fall were a fur fest for Newfoundlands. The change in sunlight affected the dog's circadian rhythm and caused them to blow coat, shed handfuls of fur for up to 1 month. They shed heaviest in spring, losing their old heavy winter undercoats, and in autumn they shed their lightest summer coats. When Al would blow coat, Donatella brushed her and swept up her fur. Normally, Donatella brushed her 3 times a week, blow-dried her once a week, and bathed her every 10 days. But in summer, when she was swimming more often, Donatella sent her to the groomer at least once a week. Al resigned herself to being brushed. She rested on one side, then on the other, while Donatella removed loose fur and untangled her coat. Brushing Al was essential to her health. If her fur became matted, her skin would not be able to breathe, and moisture would be trapped between her undercoat and skin, creating hot spots and skin problem. Donatella also checked for mats around Al's ears, where water could be trapped and cause ear infection. She trimmed the mats to allow more airflow to dry out of the ear canals and prevent infection. Donatella also had to keep the hair between Al's toes trimmed to prevent burns being caught in her fur and burrowing into her skin. Caring for the Newfoundland was time-consuming, but Donatella wanted her to be happy and healthy, and Al basked in that attention. It also helped strengthen the special bond between them. Donatella said that Al had always been a self-confident girl with little to no fear and no phobias. She had a strong character and had been relatively easy to teach, but Donatella worked constantly with her in 5-minute sessions throughout the day to accommodate Al's short attention span. And she had to train her to be less exuberant and to be modulating in her excitement toward people. She wanted to meet and greet everyone without thinking that maybe she could scare someone or induce unwanted reactions. Donatella said that she never needed to be tough on Al. She needed to be consistent with her. When Al did what Donatella asked, Donatella rewarded her with her full attention. If Al did something wrong, Donatella didn't scream at her or hit her. She would take Al by the scruff of her neck and move the skin from side to side, then bring her back to where the unwanted behavior began and tell her she was an ugly dog. And Al understood that she had done something that Donatella didn't want her to do. Donatella said that the most fundamental and important part of her relationship with Al was to have Al choose to be with her above all else. This behavior was not natural. It had to be learned. Donatella said that this was the key to understanding what kind of a relationship she had with Al and how strong the relationship was between any dog and owner. Donatella tested Al to see if they were building a relationship. She encouraged her to jump into the water and play with other people and dogs. She would wait until Al was engrossed in the activity, and then she would slip into the water without a sound. If Al noticed her, stopped playing, and raced to Donatella's side, Donatella knew that she would always have her attention and that they were building a very strong relationship. When Donatella tested Al, sometimes the dog noticed her, but often she continued playing. Donatella was disappointed. She knew she had to keep working with Al, and it was not easy to train her. Donatella explained that Newfoundlands are not more difficult to train than other breeds. They are different because they have their own timing. If you give an order to a German Shepherd, he immediately executes it. If you give a retriever a command, the dog can't wait to respond. If you give direction to a Border Collie, before you finish speaking, that Border Collie has already completed the task. A Newfoundland hears your orders, knows perfectly what you want, thinks if he or she wants to carry it out, and if that's what you want him or her to do, then he or she does it. This completely changes in the water, where the Newfoundland transforms itself from a big and clumsy land animal to an agile and impetuous swimmer. Rubbing my hand along Al's long, wide back, I felt the firmness of her broad shoulders and taut muscles. Al let her jaw drop open. She surprised me with a sloppy, wet kiss. I laughed with delight. She is incorrigible, Donatella said, shaking her head. She was not amused by Al's antics. Do you need a cloth to wipe your face? Oh, I don't mind, I said. Donatella explained that we were going to Lake Idro Scalo to meet Ferocio Pelenga and some other members of the school. Al heard Donatella say the word go in Italian and immediately jumped into the back of the vehicle. Donatella secured her in the crate. I opened the door on the passenger side and noticed black paint on the vehicle's white hood. It was an enormous portrait of a Newfoundland. Donatella smiled and said that she got the idea for the image and had it professionally painted. She was serious about her dogs and fully committed to the school. We drove through the streets of Milan, an industrial city, financial hub, and global center for fashion and design. I caught glimpses of store windows that displayed elegant dresses, fine men's jackets, rich textiles, sophisticated leather shoes, handbags, elegant silk scarves, and ties by world-famous Italian designers Prada, Versace, Armani, Marteferri, Ferragamo. And we wound our way through the busy streets of Milan. We were surrounded by beautiful and aerodynamic cars designed in Milan. There were Fiats and Alfa Romeos, a green Maserati, a white Lamborghini, and a bright red Ferrari. Italian drivers liked to test the limits of their cars and then themselves. They drove fast, close, and creatively, finding space between vehicles where at first glance none existed. Cars came so close that I closed my eyes, but Donatella was totally focused on her driving. She was alert and anticipated the movement of vehicles around her, swerving, stopping, or speeding up whatever she needed. She could not allow for a moment's lapse in focus. Driving through Milan was an adrenaline rush. I held on to the door handle so hard my hand turned white. I held my breath three or four times, as if holding my breath and sucking in my sides would help us fit between the cars pinching us from all directions. City noise, congestion, construction, zones became a blur. Looking away in the distance, I noticed the elegant spires of Duomo di Milano, and I realized that Milan had been a center for new ideas for a long time. It was a city that supported creativity, a place where people used their imaginations and discovered new ideas. It was a place that valued human expression. So it made a lot of sense to me that the idea of creating a school for water rescue dogs was welcome and embraced in Milan. We turned a corner and entered an entirely different world. Donatella slowed the car and rolled down the window. Warm air flowed through the car. I took a deep breath and smelled fresh mowed grass, sweet water, and dust, finally relaxing as we entered an enormous park. We drove near the soothing waters of Lake Idroscalo, the music of water lapping the shore. A breeze swirled around the trees and gently rustled the leaves, creating a hush broken only by the song of Italian sparrows and the caws of crows. Driving slowly and speaking softly, Donatella explained that the lake was man-made. It was opened in 1930 as a seaplane airport, and when people stopped using seaplanes for transportation, the lake was transformed into a park. She laughed and said the lake was also known as the Sea of Milan, but it was a tiny sea. It was only about 3 kilometers long and 250 to 400 meters wide. Swimming, kayaking, canoeing, rowing, paddling, dragon boats, sailing, and water skiing were popular sports. The city fathers reserved a special place on the lake for Scuola Italiana Cani Salvataggio. Its location was highlighted on the map of Lake Idroscala. Donatella parked the vehicle beside a row of ancient pine trees, and we climbed from the car. Ferruccio was waiting for us by the lake. "Come. Meet him," she invited. We walked down a gradual slope to the edge of the lake. As Donatella introduced me to Ferruccio and his dog, Mas, Al reared up and hugged Ferruccio and jumped up to greet Mas. Demanding that Al sit and behave, Donatella spoke to her firmly. She did not seem to understand. Donatella had to repeat herself 3 times. Finally, Al sat. Ferruccio said something to Donatella in a sympathetic tone. Donatella nodded, but was visibly frustrated, explaining to me that she needed to leave us while she and Al went to work with some students waiting on the beach about 200 meters away. Ferruccio shook my hand, smiled, and glanced at the lake. He had suntanned face, short-styled white hair, and neatly trimmed beard and mustache. It was clear he was a waterman. As he looked at the lake with reverence, respect, and excitement, his brown eyes were focused on the water. He had been studying it, watching it, seeing the wind pattern change from the dark blue in the center of the lake where the wind was stronger to the light blue near the shore where the water was sheltered from the breeze. He was checking it again. He knew the water was always changing. I think he was deciding where it would be safe to swim. I was evaluating the conditions too. That was my nature and the reason I had been able to break the world record for swimming the English Channel when I was 15 years old. The first woman to swim across Cook Strait and be the first person to swim the Strait of Magellan around the Cape of Good Hope, across the Bering Strait into Antarctica, and to achieve 60 channel swims. But I never jumped into any water without first researching it, then deciding whether it was safe to enter. From local experts, I learned that each waterway was unique and in constant flux, and for those reasons, it was exciting to attempt a channel swim. From Reg Brickle, one of the best English Channel pilots, I learned about tides, currents, water movement through the channel, how to judge a ship's speed, and whether a swimmer could swim fast enough to alter course to avoid running over a tanker. The Chilean Navy and the Chilean pilots taught me about the strong tidal changes in the Strait of Magellan and how the tides create rips and whirlpools that can sink ships. They showed me how to read the changing sea and how to avoid areas where whirlpools were forming. From fishermen and special forces teams in South Africa, I learned about huge waves that were generated in Antarctica by calving glaciers and how to read a set of incoming enormous waves. California surfers showed me how to enter a clear wave impact zone quickly to avoid being rumpled and crushed. Inuit living in Little Diomede Island and a helicopter pilot flying between mainland Alaska and the island explained unstoppable weather in the Bering Strait and how fast wind can move into a region and transform the water's surface from calm sea to a raging ocean. Frogmen showed me how to sight underwater hazards and assess risks. Sailors explained how to see the changes in the color of the water's surface to read the shifting directions of the wind. In Antarctica, I learned from the Quark Expedition's crew how to track the speed of icebergs and how to avoid swimming into them. Lifeguards and health departments informed me about water quality, and shark experts and marine biologists taught me about sea animals that I needed to avoid and those that would swim with me safely. I was curious about this man who had been inspired to create the school and who devoted his life to people and dogs and making sure that they were safe in the water. I wished I could speak Italian or he could understand more English. I wanted to tell him that I love being in the water, that it gives me a sense of freedom, and that while I swim, ideas flow in my head like water itself. Through the tug of the tides, I feel the pull of the moon. Through the spin of the earth, I feel the currents. Sometimes I flow with the tides and currents, and sometimes I swim against them, but that makes me stronger. You learned to swim when you were a child? I asked. Yes, I have always loved dogs, he responded. Me too. I think we are simpatico, I said. Ferruccio was wearing a red wetsuit and life vest on his compact body. Maz sat beside him and was also wearing a flotation vest. They were the man and dog I had seen in the video of my computer. I had flown one quarter of the way around the world to meet them, and I was thrilled to be with them, excited that they were going to show me the world. Maz looked at the water the way Ferruccio did. She had the same connection to it. Ah, Maz, you are beautiful. Bellissimo che ne, I said in my limited Italian. Stroking her head, she felt like a teddy bear. Maz wagged her tail. It thumped softly in the sand. She understood my American Italian. She looked at me and studied me the way Al did. I saw the gentleness and goodness in her brown eyes. Ferruccio was a sensitive man who read the expressions of the dog and the people easily. He could see that Maz and I immediately liked each other. He explained that he needed to make sure that I was not afraid of Maz. She was a big dog, and sometimes people were afraid of big dogs. I had told him that I loved dogs and I had been around big dogs all my life, but that I respected them and was careful with them. A dog wagging its tail might mean it was friendly, or it might signal that the dog is nervous or scared, or it feels threatened, so it might bite. That was what Ferruccio needed to hear. He needed to know that he could trust me around the dogs and that I would listen to him. He needed to know that I would not put any of us in harm's way. Ferruccio loosened his grip on Maz's leash and let her sniff my hand. She wagged her tail so fast that her entire body wiggled. She probably smelled the chicken sandwich I had for lunch. Ferruccio was watching Maz to see what she thought of me. A friend called this evaluation process the sniff test. He said dogs openly did this to one another. They sniffed other dogs and through their sensitive noses and brains were able to smell their intentions. In a whiff, they could determine if another dog was friend or foe. People did the sniff test more subtly by observing and questioning each other. I smiled and thought of my dad. He told me that dogs could often read people better than people could. He said if I was going to date someone, he wanted our family dog to meet the man first. If the dog disliked him, the man was not worth dating. The family dog was always right. Somehow Maz had signaled to Ferruccio that I was okay because her face and his face relaxed. He told Maz to sit and he gave her a hand signal. She was so well trained, she obeyed immediately. Dogs constantly watch people. They read their facial expressions and can interpret them. Maz watched Ferruccio to read him and know what he wanted her to do. Maz knew that she could depend upon Ferruccio, and she was devoted to him. Ferruccio petted her gently behind the ears, looking at her with love. He owned Maz since she was a puppy and had trained her right from the beginning. He had had other Newfoundlands, but Maz was immediately responsive and became very special. I asked if it was true that Italian people were known for speaking with their hands to clarify or emphasize what they were saying. A friend told me that I did that all the time. She once held my hands and I had difficulty speaking. Ferruccio laughed and said it was true Italians were known for using hand gestures a lot. He used them in communicating with the dogs, with human students, so that they would better understand him. Also, if they were a distance away, they could often see what he was saying with his hands better than they could hear him. When he pointed in a certain direction, dogs could interpret that gesture and knew where to look or where to go. He pointed at a dog in the distance. Maz immediately turned her head to see what he was pointing at and then looked expectantly at Ferruccio. As he petted her ears, she relaxed and looked at him with adoration. Speaking in a warm and affectionate voice and in a mixture of English and Italian, he said Maz was smart and had great intuition. She was gentle and careful with puppies and children and people and dogs. Consistent with hardworking, she was always ready to swim the extra kilometer. I think I understood most of what he said, but the tone Ferruccio used when he spoke about Maz reminded me of my favorite swim coach. It occurred to me that Ferruccio was also a coach of dogs and people. One of the trainers, Roberto, a large, tall man, joined us to help translate, which made better communication possible. He explained that Maz was one of the world's greatest canine water rescue dogs. She particularly enjoyed teaching other dogs how to become rescue dogs. Dogs teach dogs, I asked. Ferruccio nodded. Dogs may come from different countries and understand the different languages that people speak, but dogs all bark the same language. Dogs are remarkable beings, Roberto said. He continued to explain that the sense of smell was 10,000 to 100,000 times more acute than a human's sense of smell. They could use their noses to locate people on land and in the water, too. I thought scent was diluted by water and dogs therefore lost the scent, but I learned about black Labrador retrievers in Seattle that could smell floating orca scat in the Puget Sound up to 2 kilometers from shore. And an English Springer Spaniel named Barra that lives in Scotland, a member of the canine search and rescue team who can detect the scent of a body in a river, firth, or lake. The scent of a body's gases rises to the surface of the water, and Barra can pick up that scent. Alexander Horowitz, a world-renowned researcher on dog cognition, explained how acute a dog's sense of smell is. She wrote that a person might be able to notice a teaspoon of sugar in a cup of coffee, but a dog could smell a teaspoon of sugar in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. I wondered if dogs could smell people's emotions because a human's body chemistry changes with their mood shifts. Maybe the dog happens to know that. Maybe it even happens to dogs. I told Ferruccio about my yellow Labrador named Cody, who would sit beside me when I had coffee on Main Street and Seal Beach. People would stop by and say hello to Cody. One day, K.A. Colorado, an artist, came by and sat beside me. Cody got a good sniff of him and passed, and Cody stood up, walked around me, and sat beside K.A., a man we just met. Cody always sat beside me, but he learned about K.A., and then he leaned on him and let him pet him. K.A. told me that his dog had just died. Cody knew that and was comforting K.A. Another time, Cody and I were sitting on a bench to Seal Beach. A young boy in a wheelchair and his father passed by. Cody walked over to the boy and sat beside him and let him pet him. The boy's father said they just lost their assistance dog. He knew that Cody was sitting beside his son to comfort him. Ferrucci observed that Cody was responding to the scent of their emotion. Ferrucci had an easy way about him. He listened well and was open to ideas. He craved learning, and that was probably why he had so many people and their dogs wanting to attend his school. But I was curious. I had read all about all sorts of obedience schools for dogs, watched dog trials on television, and loved Lassie, the smartest and sweetest collie I had ever seen. But his idea to start a school for water rescue dogs was so creative and so unusual. Next week, we'll read Chapter 5, Terra Nova, Newfoundland, in the book Tales of Al, the Water Rescue Dog, The Making of a Superhero and a Super Athlete, by Lynn Cox. Well, that completes our readings for today. I do hope you've enjoyed them, and I invite you back again next time when we read more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce Vesper for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.